This is Steve Sherlock with another in a series of Franklin Matters radio shows, number 199 in the series. We are now developing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM. This recording shares the workshop on student services conducted by the Franklin Mass School Committee on Tuesday, January 28, 2020. What is student services? Student services cover the special education program. What are the requirements? What is an IEP? What can be done about addressing the rising costs of special education? All these topics and more are discussed in this workshop. The presentation document used is linked here so you can follow along. Without further ado, here's the recording for the meeting, which runs approximately 55 minutes.
The time being, 6 o'clock, I'm going to call to order the first part of our school committee meeting, and then we'll continue the second part at 7 o'clock. This is a workshop part. I am Ann Bergen, chair of the committee. We are being recorded. The reason I'm saying that, Steve Sherlock is here, and he's going to explain why I said my name. Steve?
Yes, you would. I think you're all aware of Franklin Matters. Now coordinating with Franklin Cable and TV, so because you're not in the room downstairs where they have the nice fancy stuff in the room, they provision me with a mobile unit, so we have the mobile unit to provide similar audio quality to capture the recording. Because we're also not on TV, as you speak for the first time, if you just announce yourself, that way I'm Steve Sherlock, people will then be able to associate name with the voice as they continue to listen to the meeting in the future. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to turn it over to Sarah. Do you want to introduce our...
Sure. We have three folks here from our Student Services Department. Paula Morano is our Director of Student Services. Kim Stolowski is Assistant Director of Student Services. And Helen White is also an Assistant Director of Student Services. And we thought that we would have them come and present in this workshop format. I'm Sarah Ahern. I think you probably sorry, I didn't say it when I started speaking. Pick up the context from Dr. Bergen turning it over to me. But that we would have them share a bit about student services in this workshop format, allow you to learn more, ask questions. And I guess with that, I will turn it over to them.
Very good.
So this is Paula Morano, Director of Student Services. So I want to thank you all for having us here tonight to explain special education in Franklin. So we'll give first an overview of special ed law and what that looks like, and then talk specifically about our programming here in Franklin.
I'm Kim Stolowski. I'm the Assistant Director of Student Services, and we're going to start out with, I know that you've all received the packet, so please, if you've gone through it and you have questions, please stop us at any time, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. Obviously, our goal is to educate all the students with a free and appropriate public education with high standards and expectations. And we use research-based tools to identify students requiring special education services. And those special tools allow us to identify lagging skills that they have, whether it be social-emotional skills, reading skills, pragmatic language, you know, that's kind of the broad scope of the tools that we use. And then we also have tools that are evidence-based or research-based to address each of those lagging skills. We use accessibility features like technology, speech-to-text, for students who have difficulty with reading. We have Google Read and Write, which assists students in completing, it will read the text to them, and then it will also do speech to text so that they're able to compose their own writing. We have Learning Ally, iReady. These are online programs to assist with both math and reading, and sound field amplification systems for students with auditory processing deficits. Those are just some of the tools and research-based technologies we have. We also have programs like that are used in the classrooms around the district, such as Brain Frames, Touch Math, iReady, Linda Mood Bell, Reach Naturally, Wilson. We also have our guidance counselor, our adjustment counselor, school psychologists have recently been trained in dialectic behavior therapy, and the whole district is working on trauma-informed interventions for our students. In Massachusetts, we were one of the first states to enact special education law with Chapter 766. The federal legislation was based upon the Massachusetts law. IDEA is most recent iteration of the federal special education law. We have we also, in student services, we also assist students with 504, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, which provides students with disabilities accommodations to level the playing field so they can access our free and appropriate education. Oh, and the Americans with Disabilities Act, which makes all of our schools physically accessible to the students as well.
So in Massachusetts, we continue to support our students with disabilities. So we have the Autism Spectrum Law that was in 2006 that we should, our programming should specifically target specific areas of weakness in students with autism. We also have an observation law which allows parents the ability to observe all special ed programs and also anyone that they choose to come in to observe the programs, as well as our anti-bullying law, our student discipline reform law, and our newest law that that was just brought into enactment is the dyslexia law, which Kim will elaborate on and how we're addressing that.
Yeah. So in 2018, the Massachusetts legislature decreed that all students shall be screened for dyslexia in the Massachusetts public schools, and we're still waiting on the advisory from Harvard Med, but that did stop us from getting moving on it. Our district has approved the formation of a work group that will look at the law and how we can come into compliance and identify formative assessment tools that are research-based and can help us to identify any students with dyslexia. The group is currently forming right now. It will include representation from each elementary school here in Franklin, and it will also include both special education and general education teachers, as well as our literacy specialists and administrators and team chairs. So we're very excited. The response to the posting which went out to the district was, we've had a strong response. So I think we may even have to turn people away, which is nice. We'll be working on that as a group, looking at the research, looking at different programs, and providing the school district. We already provided a preliminary budget, but we'll be providing a more specific budget as time goes on, once we've identified a tool, and then we'll present our recommendation to the district and then move toward developing professional development for the use of the tool.
Can you jump in for 1 second just to frame the context
yes.
of that? The dyslexia law, we jumped on while we're waiting for the guidance, I think because it really fits with strategic improvement goal number 3 around instruction that meets the needs of learners and tiered instruction. So this isn't just about the program that Kim is talking about isn't just about identifying students with dyslexia, that is part of it, but it is broader in scope, which is to identify struggling readers and to provide interventions and support as part of a tiered system. So it fits right in line with our third strategic initiative.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And there are some tools that are bundled with language and math as well. So if that were, we could also use that data to assist students in that. Mm-hmm.
So some basic principles of all the laws, both federal and state law, require that parents significantly participate in the process. We want parents to participate. They're part of our team. It takes a whole team to really meet the needs of each and one of our students, and that includes parents. We need to all be on the same page. We all need to work collaboratively to provide what we, the supports and services students need to access curriculum. Appropriate evaluations must be tailored and focused on the suspected disability. There's no longer this core evaluation. You know, we still every once in a while get those requests from physicians of a core evaluation. Really, it needs to be very targeted in what the suspected disability is. So our team, whenever we get a request for an evaluation from a parent or an outside provider, we always make a phone call and say, okay, what exactly are the areas of weakness? What areas are you concerned about, and really make sure that we're targeting those areas and those evaluations. We don't want to do too much testing on a student. We don't want to take them out of the classroom too much.
That's good.
We want them to be in the classroom as much as possible. If a child is eligible for special education, then we are required to develop an individualized educational program, and the key word is individualized. It's based on the child's needs. We are required by law to provide a child with a free and appropriate public education. Free meaning that it's without cost to the parent, it's appropriate, that it's reasonably calculated based on the child's disability, and a program that will provide educational benefit and is meaningful for the child. Public means it has to be in our public schools, and if not, then we have to fund it. And education, obviously, it needs to focus on the child being able to develop those lagging skills and acquired knowledge, including social-emotional. Again, we're required by law that we educate a student in the least restrictive environment with their neurotypical peers. It's supported by research that children learn best alongside their non-disabled peers and to the maximum extent appropriate. What we do, and it's what we strive to do. Every parent, when they refer a child for an evaluation or a child participates in an IEP or has an IEP, gets their procedural notice of safeguard. So these are parents' rights. We give this out at every IEP meeting. We give this out to every referral, and we encourage the parents to read them because it really explains what their rights in regards, explains special education and what their rights are. It becomes a joke after that parents wallpaper walls with this. Well, this is actually updated for the first time in a year, so we actually changed our color, so parents were happy to see that. So the IEP process is quickly is, you know, a child can be referred for an educational, for an IEP evaluation by a parent, by an outside provider. It can, and any, the referral, the request can go to anyone. It can go to a teacher, it can go to a principal, it can go to the special educator, whoever, and we have to be quick within 5 days to process the referral and complete the evaluation. Within 45 days, we meet with the child's parents to determine if the child is eligible for special education. If they are eligible, we develop that program, and it's supposed to be in the parent's hands. Upon written approval of the parents, we implement the service supports and services that are in the plan. We meet annually with the parents to talk about progress and redevelop the plan.
At a minimum, right.
Yes. Most of our teams meet more than that for progress meetings. And then every 3 years, we reevaluate the child. We could reevaluate the child even earlier than that if the team deems necessary.
Any questions?
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Oh, yes, we were just discussing that. So, MJ, go ahead.
Just, okay, the number of referrals that you receive. Mm-hmm. How many new referrals do you receive, I guess, annually? How about per month?
Per month?
Per week?
December and March are probably our biggest referral dates around report card time. We get the probably average four per school, maybe. three or four per school, depending.
In those specific ones.
In those, especially in those specific ones. We get most parent referrals usually around report card time. But then the IST process, we have our instructional support process where the school-based team might refer students if they're not making effective progress with tier one and tier two supports. It's hard to say. I'm like ballparking it, but.
But it's a continuum.
I would say
it
about,
is continuous.
I would say
yes.
About 30
okay.
referrals a year per school on average, 25 to 30 referrals per year.
Following that timeline.
Following this
yes.
timeline.
Yes.
Dear God.
And at all different grade levels.
All different
yes.
grade
I,
levels.
Even older students and still in high school we're finding that people are being
years.
Referred. Which is unexpected, but
yeah.
it happens.
Like for the usual kind of things?
A whole variety of things.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I just was going to ask about, just because we're having the legislators come next week, and I was looking at all the legislation and the sort of the mandates that are being put on public schools, which are all wonderful things. I was just looking at just the last one, like the dyslexia one,
yes.
and all of the training and the
yes.
assessment. And do they supply a lot of money to go along with that? I was just curious.
Dr. Bergen, you know.
I know. I know the answer. I just want it out there. I want it out
so
there.
Yes. Unfunded.
It's an unfunded.
Thank you.
Unfunded
I just because.
Mandate. An important mandate.
It is. That's
it's
it. It's wonderful.
Work.
It's wonderful. And it is. But you look at just the last, the number of years, all of those different. Let's put another law. Let's put some more things. We won't give the money to go along with it.
Right.
We won't lengthen the school day. That's all. So I just
yes.
wanted to.
And
get
that's
that
a lot
across.
Of the discussion I have in my regional special educator
yeah.
director meetings, as well as, you know, we keep getting these mandates and, you know, we have to come up with a screening tool and universal screening. And yes, it's all important things.
And understanding the time that goes
yes.
into all of this and the cost of professional development and the toll that it just that's the kind of the message we have to keep. It's all wonderful stuff.
Yes.
Screening for dyslexia, that's wonderful.
Right.
I mean, if we can get those reading issues early,
early
it is
early
primo.
Interventions
primo.
Right.
It makes us best, you know,
yeah.
in terms of public
well,
schools, what we're doing.
And hopefully on the other end, you don't have these kids that we find in fourth grade
right.
that require
too
so
late.
Much more
late.
Too late. You are absolutely
so,
right.
You know, eventually, fingers crossed, it becomes, you know, pay me now or pay me later.
Right.
So it would be a cost savings eventually. That's the hope.
Right.
Thank
absolutely.
You. Carry on, people. I just.
So here is a chart providing a historical view of our numbers in Franklin over the last 3 years. I do want to hang a sign on the jump from 2018 to 2019, and I will put it out there that we think it was a data glitch of some sort. Starting in 2018, when I came into this position, and Jan Turner, who I'm sure you all heard about, came to Tech, and what we've been doing is really looking at the SIMS data before we certify those numbers, and really taking a deep dive to make sure they're accurate, checking the numbers against our own rosters and numbers that we're keeping within the office. And we really do feel like this is a more accurate count of our special education numbers and percentages. The
it's
state
come up, it's come up in a couple other places. We have a presentation for MCAS around, excuse me, advanced coursework.
Right. Jan is really taking a look
okay.
at our data, and we have increasing confidence in the data that we
yes,
have
absolutely.
Based on her review.
Absolutely.
So I just want to, it's
she's
part
a very thorough.
Part of a data review
right.
process we're doing.
So our numbers are staying slightly below the state average. The state average is about 18% for students with disabilities on in the state. So when a student is eligible, Mrs. Dr. S.
Yep.
So there's a four-pronged test for eligibility, and it includes: does the child have a disability? Is the child failing to make effective progress? Is the failure to make effective progress due to the disability? And does that child require specially designed instruction in order to make progress? All four of those questions have to be answered yes in order for a child to qualify for special education services. For instance, if we evaluated a child who, say, has attention deficit disorder, has been diagnosed by a a pediatrician with attention deficit disorder, they are referred for an evaluation. We do our own testing. We say, yes, the child has a disability. The next question is the child making effective progress in school? And if, is the child not making effective progress in school? Sorry. If that answer is no, in other words, they are making effective progress, then they do not qualify for special education services. So just the idea of having a disability does not get an IEP. If that child required accommodations instead of specially designed instruction, for instance, that no, they're not making effective progress, and the lack of effective progress is due to the disability, but they don't require specially designed instruction like Wilson or DBT or some other touch mat, for instance, then that child could be then qualified for a 504 plan, which is only accommodations. So the teacher would check in and check out with the student, and all of these things could be provided by a general education teacher in the general education environment. So that child would not qualify.
So this is the list of educational disabilities that a student may be identified with when they go through the evaluation process. The numbers in green signify the number of students as of October 1st here in Franklin identified with those disability types. This includes pre-K all the way up to our out-of-district students age 22 and also our itinerant students, so our students that might just come in for speech and language, say at the preschool level. I just want to note that we've seen a significant increase with students identified with an emotional disability, even as our enrollment numbers have gone down, as well as obviously autism, which we weren't surprised with, and communication is another one that we've seen many students identified with. I'd like to just kind of talk a little bit about the students with emotional disabilities. You'll probably hear this from me again in a couple weeks when Lucas and I talk about our SEL programming, but we are seeing more and more students in our district and throughout the Commonwealth, not even just our district,
that's
probably
right,
throughout the United States, identified with emotional disabilities. Anxiety being very, very prevalent, even in students as young as 3 to 5. So you'll see that we've put a lot of supports in place and programming in place, including professional development to support our students with emotional disabilities. We're realizing more and more that if students aren't ready to learn because they're not available to learn, they're not going to learn. So we really need to address those emotional challenges that they're having. We were lucky last year where we were able to allocate some school adjustment counselors to all our elementary schools. We've already seen some wonderful results from having that extra support in our buildings. We have project interface partnerships as well as U Inc. to help support our students with counseling services, as well as this year we were also able to get 3 counseling interns from the collegiate level to help support. So we're trying to do whatever we can to really support our students with emotional disabilities. And you'll hear more and more of this year. So what is special education? Again, as Kim said, it's specially designed instruction to meet the unique needs of each student. We provide related services, which I'll go into a little deeper in the next couple of slides, which includes the PT, OT, speech and language, vision services. Special education, as Kim alluded to, is a significant modification of content for students, instructional approaches, and instructional levels and performance levels. It's not just accommodations. We're really modifying the curriculum to help that student access the curriculum. It's not just accommodations, which I just said. Here's our list of related services that we have in district. Most of these services are provided by district staff. However, if there's just a small incidence of students who need these services, we will contract with other agencies, specifically orientation and mobility, teachers of the hearing impaired and audiologists, as well as home BCBAs. We have home programming for our students with significant autism, and that helps bridge the gaps between home and schools, skills between home and schools. We provide parent consultation and training, like behavioral training for our parents, for our young 3 to 5 year olds and some of our elementary students to help with parents in the home, as well as assistive technology. So we'll do assistive technology evaluations for students who might be struggling accessing the curriculum due to reading and writing deficits, or communicate and communication. That's probably our biggest for assistive technology.
This list is by no means exhaustive.
It is not.
Yes. Every time we think we've got the whole list there,
we need a different consultant.
We need something else for this.
You know, and that's
student
the
presents with a disability, and we're saying, oh my goodness, we need to look further.
Right. One thing I'd like to mention also with this slide is, as we keep saying, we have to help the students access curriculum and access the building. So it's even beyond instruction. We even have to get materials and equipment for them, specifically, as I said, augmentative communication devices. We have a number of students who have iPads, and that is their communication. That is how they talk to their family. That is how they speak to their teachers. We have to provide standers and walkers for some of our students in wheelchairs to help them with mobility and to be part of their therapy. We also are to the point that we have to, but we just purchased a hospital bed because we have a student, a couple of our students in wheelchairs who are in the middle school and high school levels who still need help assistance with toileting and personal care. And for the safety of our staff, they really, it's hard for our staff to keep them standing when they have to help them, and therefore we purchased hospital beds to make that a little bit easier for both staff and student. So that's the point we're going to. Like, we have students with significant medical needs now and multiple disabilities that we're educating in our schools, which is a wonderful thing with their neurotypical peers, but that comes at a cost as far as equipment and whatnot. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. So when you see these things in the bills and whatnot, this is why we're doing it. It's really to provide the best services we can for our students so they can, we can educate them in the least restrictive environment. So.
Yeah.
So now we'll talk about numbers per school. So this is ECDC, our Early Childhood Development Center. It provides an integrated preschool experience for our 3 to 5 year olds. We are 50% or more of the students at the school are children without disabilities. So it's a special ed program, and the advantage of this is we bring non-disabled typical peers into the program. And there's decades of research that show that children with disabilities have greater gains in achievement, communication, social emotional development when they're educated and supported beside their non-disabled peers. And if you ever want to make your day, just go to ECDC, because they'll make you smile. It's the best part of our day. I know Dr. Hearn loves going there, too.
I do. Yeah.
It's so much fun.
It's the best. The special education data is on our next slide, and it's broken down by elementary schools in the district. You can see that there's a little bit of a data anomaly there, that Kennedy is at 23%, whereas the other schools are more in line with the state average, or actually below. We're still trying to get a handle on that, trying to identify what that is due to, and we're working closely with the school and with the special educators there.
And we want you to know that the story is not just in numbers, there's a story behind those numbers.
Yeah.
And the story is the students are coming to us with a range of disabilities and a range of needs of programming and specialized instruction to support them. And that's what we have to do to support our students.
But know that it's an ongoing conversation.
Yes, yes.
When
we're always looking at numbers.
We look at data,
data
and we say, what's going on here?
And what can we do? So we have a continuum of services in our district. And we're very proud of our continuum of services. It starts with the co-teaching model, and the co-teaching at the elementary level isn't what the same as the co-teaching that we see at the high school level. So co-teaching can be different different models. At the elementary level, it's typically the special education teacher will come in for a subject area and teach with the general ed teacher. They might break up into small groups and do some flexible grouping where the special ed teacher might take some general ed students who are struggling along with some special ed students and support them and do some instruction. It might be that the special ed teacher teaches the lesson and the gen ed teacher takes a small group. So it's really fluid, but it's that general ed teacher and special ed teacher working together. We also have inclusion support, where our educational support professionals may support students to just work on those generalization of skills. We do specialized instruction, where our special ed teachers will take the students out of the classroom if they need a quieter and smaller environment to provide specialized instruction. And we also have related service providers, which again are our speech OT, PT. They might pull kids out into their small offices to do specialized instruction, or they might be supporting the students within the general ed classroom. Often we see a counselor go into the general ed classroom, a speech language pathologist go in to do some social pragmatics groups. It's very fluid. Again, the goal is to provide services in the least restrictive environment, least being in the gen ed classroom, more restrictive being outside of the classroom.
Many times our students learn in the pull-out setting with a special educator, and then the expectation is they generalize the skills into the general education classroom, and sometimes they need support in the general education classroom in order to generalize those skills that they've learned in the separate setting.
When we have a cohort of students with similar learning profiles and intensive needs, we develop a district-wide specialized program. We are proud of our 5 district-wide specialized programs that we have. You build it, they will come. They are ever expanding, and they grow. They are growing, that's all I'll say, they are growing. So they're housed in our buildings. These are the elementary programs, and I'll go into more details in the next couple of slides. But then our Strive, Reach, and Ideas program then move on to the middle school level. And goals will expand to the middle school level next year. And then we have Reach and Strive at the high school level as well.
Can I jump in for a second? Yep. Just to contextualize this too. Franklin's a bit unique in terms of our size. We're a bit bigger than many other Massachusetts districts. So we have a bit more capacity and ability to build some specialized programs. That being said, this is a trend that's being seen in other districts where there is enough of a cohort of similar students with similar profiles that districts are building some in-district programming similar to mm-hmm. what we have.
Any questions? I'm gonna pause there.
We also routinely evaluate these programs
yes.
to make sure we're doing the best that we can for our students. We just finished a Strive review this year we're reviewing the Reach program.
Right, so we do that, we kind of cycle through.
Yeah.
I did have one question
yes.
just on something you had brought up before. Mm-hmm. When you talked about the process for the IEP, and there are 4 criteria, but often, and this was just in my history, you know, going way back, is sometimes parents wouldn't agree with that. So what's the process when there's a finding of no special needs, but a parent doesn't agree with that? What's the process there, and what does that involve? And does it ever get to the point where you need legal implications? And again, it's one of those things that's time and money and whatever, but it isn't, just from my own experience, it wasn't always parents saying, I agree,
okay.
That's wonderful. No, I mean, there were a lot of times huge, which a parent will fight for those, that's good, and that's a good thing. I'm just saying, that's a piece of it, that happens, right? In terms
absolutely.
Of,
yes.
And what's the next step if a parent doesn't, is there a mediator? Or?
It's all outlined.
Yeah.
So they can take their rejection to the school district's findings to the, Bureau. Thank you. I was going to say board. I know it was board. Bureau of Special Education of Appeals. And then they present their case. They fill out this form. They present that to the Bureau.
Yeah.
And the Bureau will come back with their findings. They'll ask for documentation and what the district's findings are. You can either go to mediation, where you have a mediator come in
right.
and try to work things out, or you can go to hearing, where it goes to a hearing.
Right, and I only say it just so people can see the complexity of the process, that
yes.
it is, that it's much more involved than people, you know, that, and that again is time, and it's meetings, and it's what goes into a program, and it's a good thing. I'm not suggesting in any way that it isn't, but just to sort of keep educating the public about the complexity of the process so that people see it. That's all. That's why I was raising that. You know, it isn't, from my experience, there were lots of times people wouldn't agree, and then it would have to go to mediation, and there might be litigation, and then you look at the cost and the time and all the time that goes into those things. So anyway, just
And we hope before we get to the mediation point, we try to reconvene the team a few times to really work it out as a district and family, and really try to.
It's a good process. It really is. It's a thorough, respectful process, but it's time consuming and it's a lot. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Here's our middle school numbers again. We're around the state average. Again, another little heightened percentage at Remington that we continue to dig deep in. This is historical that Remington has had a higher percentage. Initially it was because of our IDEAS program, which at the time was our largest specialized program, but it's still staying high. So we continue to dig deep, we continue to do work with our teachers and whatnot to make sure our students are getting their needs met, even at the tier one and tier two level. Again, as I said earlier, the continuum continues at the middle school level with REACH, IDEAS, and STRIVE continuing in the middle school population. And then we have high school, which is a relatively lower percentage, which isn't, it's nice to see, which is what you should see, is that the number of students with IEPs are coming down as the students are getting older, because there's those underdeveloped skills are no longer underdeveloped. And here's our continuum at Franklin High. I know, Ellen, you wanted to speak to STRIVE.
Yes, so I'm Ellen White. I haven't spoken yet. Kim and I are both assistant directors of special ed. She focuses more on in-district students and needs, and I focus mostly on out-of-district students with some in-district responsibilities. So specifically, I work closely with the STRIVE Continuum, which is our student program for students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And that is our largest continuum. So we start right from preschool and go right through age 22. So those are the students who have the most need. And their programming looks different throughout the continuum. But at the high school level, we have two programs. We have the grades 9 through 12, which is a typical high school program with lots of opportunities for inclusion. Franklin High has so many different groups and classes and levels. So those students are completely included throughout the day, really based on their interest and level of need. In high school, it's really becoming student-driven, so we want to know what their goals and interests are. And so we start with a transition planning form, which is something that starts at age 14. But in high school, we really want the student to tell us what they're interested in, and that helps drive the IEP. So we're working on goals and objectives to make sure that we're getting them ready for post-high school opportunities. So we also have a fifth year, well, we have a program for 18 to 22, which is a transition program. So those are for students who have the most need, again, who will likely be in work situations that are supported after high school. They will be working with state agencies likely to help support them. So again, that 18 to 22 program is us really getting them ready. So they spend a lot of time in the community. They have opportunities to have job experiences. They do lots of functional academics, work out in the community. They shop, they cook, they make beds. We have a whole suite set up just like an apartment. So it's a really exciting program. And then new this year to us is for a select group of students called the ICE program. It's actually, we call it the MAISY program now because of the political connotations of ICE. They've sort of changed the way they pronounce that. Right? So it stands for, the MA is Massachusetts. It's the concurrent enrollment, the Inclusive Concurrent Enrollment Initiative. I always stumble on that. So this year we had one student at Massasoit Community College. Mm-hmm. And it was a partnership. This is a program that is statewide. Massachusetts has been really progressive with it. Massasoit is in a trial period, so the tuition was free. And we partner. We have to provide an ed coach for a student and they spend 3 days a week on a college campus and 2 days a week here in Franklin. Those 2 days a week here are generally based in the community, and it's a really exciting opportunity. So we partnered with one family this year who was willing to take a chance because this was new to all of us. We've been learning along the way, but it has been an amazing opportunity for this student. So next year, we have partnered with Bridgewater State College, and what's exciting about that is it's a four-year college. So the students, the typical students that are there are very invested in the social aspect of college.
Yeah.
And so these students will be partnering with our students and really encouraging them to be a part of the community. So again, based on a student's goals, if their goal is to go to college, it's okay if they can't manage the academic load. We modify curriculum, they audit classes, some students take classes for credit. There's just, the sky's the limit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really exciting. We have three students that have applied for that program for next year. There's also a residential component for students in their last year that is also funded by a grant right now. So again, we work closely with the college to help determine who the right candidate is for that. And they do have pretty specific criteria, but this is a very exciting opportunity that we're happy to bring to Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And the research is really strong to support that students who have this post high school experience have better outcomes with health, employment, independent living,
exactly.
I mean,
transportation,
all the things you want
skills.
for your children.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right in alignment with our
culture.
Any questions?
Questions?
I have a question. The postgraduate program, is that a program mandated by the state or the federal government for Franklin to do?
We are mandated to provide transitional services for our students, and we are mandated to educate them until they're 22 if they're not ready to receive their high school diploma or if they're not
okay.
ready to move on. So these are students who either parents or student are saying they need another year.
Exactly.
And we are mandated by state and federal law to provide that until they're age 22.
Okay, thank you.
It's very exciting. Russell Johnson, who is my big boss in the FDESE, is so excited about this program and is really promoting this program across the Commonwealth. So it's exciting that we are also taking part in this program.
And it doesn't have to be until 22. It can be,
right.
Some students get 1 year if that's what they feel like they need. One extra year to, you know, make sure that they've got the skills ready for whatever their next step is. That could be working in the community, that could be taking a class at a community college, might be a gap year. So it could be from 18 to 22, very specifically individualized to the student.
That forms another question. If someone's in that program, funded perhaps to their 22, and they only take 1 year, how do you know that they're now ready and they don't need to go all the way to 22?
So it's very data-driven. It's a partnership with the family, the school. We oftentimes have state agencies that come in and are supporting students. So collectively, we make decisions. And we project out. We start thinking about if they can meet these goals, we feel like they might be ready. So we're constantly meeting for progress meetings and in close communication to make sure that we're getting students ready for whatever their next step is.
Do you ever have anyone who decides they're at the right step and then wants to come back?
Well, we have students that. There are a few different options. If it is a student who has earned their right to a high school diploma, meaning they've passed the MCAS and they've earned enough high school credits, sometimes we decide that it isn't just about the academics. So they've met the academic criteria, but there are other reasons that we feel like they need an extra year. If they have the extra year and they decide I'm ready, I've accepted my diploma, then that's it. They can't come back. We have had students who've dropped out of school, and that's a reality of students with special needs. Sometimes it's really hard and they just get fed up and they're done, and then they haven't earned their high school diploma and they're home for a year and it hasn't been very productive, and they come back to us and say, I think I'm ready.
Okay.
And we re-enroll them and we get back to where they left off, and and they're entitled to an education until they're 22 or until they earn their high school diploma.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
I have a quick question.
Jen?
Hi.
Hi.
So you talked, I think, Paul, you mentioned the expansion of goals.
Yes.
So is there anything at the high school for?
Not for goals. So we're kind of,
okay,
we're growing it as we need it at this point. Goals is our one of our younger programs.
Okay.
So it only started 3 years ago.
Yep.
So right now we now have 2 fifth graders that need to move on to the middle school.
Okay.
So we're growing it. With that, but I anticipate we'll continue to grow. High school's been really good about supporting students with high functioning autism,
yep,
which is typically the profile of the students in goals.
Okay.
They've really been tailoring their program, as Ellen said, for the
kind
student
of,
needs.
Yeah.
So there's some small group classes and there's some small social pragmatic classes. And so they're really able, because it's so large, able to support students with that high functioning.
Okay. And I have another question, but I don't know if this is reentry,
yep,
program. Is that more social emotional stuff? Do you want me to wait on that question?
Yes,
because
okay, that, yeah, we'll talk more about,
yeah,
that.
And other times.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
So we'll give you a little bit of an overview of our specialized programs. IDEAS, as I said, is at Jefferson and Remington right now. We don't have a high school component for IDEAS. Typically, the students who are in the IDEAS programs through middle school then go into small group classes and kind of have special programming tailored for them. At the high school level, but this is for our students with language-based learning disabilities. Typically, it's a multi-sensory instruction addressing language development throughout the school day. So it's our students with specific learning disabilities in reading, in writing, communication skills, receptive and expressive language skills, as well as dyslexia. Typically, by the time our students get to the middle school, 7th, 8th grade level, they are fully included for science and social studies with support either from the specialized program teacher or an educational support professionals. All of our students in our specialized program receive most of their instruction in that small group, but as they are able to be successful with support in the gen ed classroom, they are brought into the gen ed classroom with that support. IDEAS they typically get, as I said, in science and social studies by the middle school level based on their disability type.
The REACH program is located at Oak Street Elementary, Horace Mann Middle School, and the high school. And it services students who need a therapeutic program. Typically, the students in this program have normal IQs, pretty intact academics, although that varies due to their difficulty accessing the curriculum when they are
dysregulated.
This is a therapeutic program, and it does have a behavioral component to it, but it is not a behavior break. It is for students who have emotional disabilities, and they could be have comorbid autism or specific learning, but the salient feature of the students in the REACH program is their emotional disability. So
not surprising, this is one of our largest programs that we have in the district.
It also, there's a, at each level, there is a school adjustment counselor that is specifically assigned to that program. And at the middle school, we actually have a school adjustment counselor and a student intern, so that's great too.
And I see the time, so we're going to quickly move.
Yeah.
Goals program is our program for students with autism, specifically social language challenges. Again, as I was just saying, it's a growing program. We have 2 fifth graders currently right now in the program, so we will need to expand that to a middle school program next year. So one would think, well, next year is only being a class of 2. Nope, not really, because what we do have is some students in our REACH program who have autism with anxiety and whatnot that we think would probably be better, benefit more from a goals-based program. So we might be shifting some students based on, obviously, we're working with parents on that, but just because that would be a probably
makes
better
sense
fit than having students with autism in the REACH program.
Yeah.
We talk about, you know, it's students with anxiety and then reacting to students who might have more outward
social emotional challenges sometimes aren't a good mix.
That's the way it used to be when, and it was a bad combination.
It
I'm so glad you're doing that.
It is a bad combination. Yeah. And we've been talking to, we have a consultant right now because we're doing the program review, and he's like, this happens throughout the district that it's really hard to separate.
Yeah,
because
I'm so glad you're doing
so
that. Yeah,
we're good. Finally, yes, everyone's happy that we're finally going to have a middle school program. So it's going to go from like a program of 2 to probably a program of 6. We went over Strives. This is my favorite, not my favorite, they're all my favorite programs, but this is the one I'm most proud of. We have partnered, last year we started partnering with the New England Center for Children, and this is our partner program. And this is for students who have moderate to severe autism. These are students that typically would go out of district. They would typically go to NEC for their schooling or Crossroads or the May Center. And we are able now to keep these students in district. What's great about this program is the classroom teacher is a NEC teacher. And we also have the supervisor, BCBA supervisor who oversees the program is also from NEC. We employ the ABA techs, which are the one-to-one professionals, as well as the speech and OT and any other related service providers. It's been a wonderful program. I just need to tell this anecdote of one of our parents who came up to me after her daughter was in kindergarten, and she gave me a big hug, and she said, Paula, this is so wonderful. She said, I never thought my daughter would be invited to a play date with a neurotypical peer. And she is invited to many play dates. And I will tell you the most recent story about this student is, so the students typically eat lunch in their classroom just because it's very overwhelming and overstimulating for them to go into the cafeteria with the other grade level peers. This student has progressed and is able to go into the cafeteria, and the her ABA tech was telling me that she had 5 students run up to her and say, can I sit with her at lunch today? Melts your heart.
Yeah.
Another one, which hopefully I'll quickly show you the picture at the end of the slideshow, but we also have another student who is included in the concert. He's up there on the concert last week playing his recorder and participating and singing and dancing and bopping with the rest of the fourth grade peers. It warms your heart. And this is why we bring these programs into districts, so that our kids can stay in their neighborhood schools. It's what we need to do.
It's good for everyone.
Yeah.
It's good for everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, and
can I add to that so
yes.
quickly? And that's like one of the things, Anne, you were saying about parents rejecting IEPs or sort of getting into legal battles with school districts. Sometimes it's because of that. They're never invited to a birthday party.
Yep.
What are you going to do about it?
Exactly.
And so then if you send them out of district, the price tag is so high, and then the service might be appropriate, but like they're 45 minutes away, they're an hour and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
And so then how are you going to have play dates with those kids?
Exactly.
You know, and so just the fact that they can have that really intense, very highly specialized programming in their home district, in their neighborhood schools,
yes.
is really powerful. And that, like, I know it sounds sort of cheesy and corny, but like this is the thing that parents will sue a school about.
Absolutely.
Like they don't get invited to play dates. And I know it sounds overdramatic, but it's like, it's just like the tip of an iceberg of like feeling discluded and
yeah.
sort of a lack of feeling of trust to a district. And so having something like this in the district is really a powerful thing.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
and just a caveat is because we have all this wonderful program, which we're very proud of,
mm-hmm.
people are actually telling us they're moving to Franklin for our programs. We had 2 students move to Franklin this summer because of the NEC Partner Program. You build it, they will come, right? So it's something to be proud of.
Yeah. We get emails all the time.
We do.
People yeah. ask you about our programs.
So the word's out there about special ed services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
What? Yeah,
just,
yes.
really
quick.
Just quickly, what's the typical cost
Good
of a
question.
Student in the NEC program?
Miriam?
so to bring the students in and to run the program in, we're paying probably close to $70,000 per student in district in our NEC program. But if we were sending them out to NEC, we would be paying at least that much to the tuition to go to the NEC program, and we would pay transportation on top of that to Southborough.
NEC is about $120,000 per student, not counting the transportation, not counting if they need to one-to-one. If they need
right,
the one-to-one,
right.
that's an added cost. So, yes.
Oh, you jumped into money, Miriam. How new is that program?
This is our second year.
Okay, so we're a little too early to look at taking surrounding towns?
Yes.
As like a tuition-based?
We are, but we've been starting to have those conversations.
I had a few conversations about it, but I think that's a policy question.
Okay. But we are talking about it. Next year, NEC will have to expand. We have two students from ECDC coming up who need the partner program. Right now, we have a seven student program. We need to expand that further for the amount of students that we already have in the program and the two incoming students. Okay. We're at capacity.
Okay.
We will be by the end of the year. Yeah. We have some students transitioning in from the STRIVE program. So we'll have to expand another program next year. So, we'll have some room then. So we talk about it often. We had, like I said, two students move in to go to the NEC program. So.
All right, so Ellen, just quickly,
talk about money.
Talking about money. So we talk about the continuum of services and all the great program we have that we're very proud of. At some point, there are students whose needs exceed our capacity, and those are students who go to out-of-district placements. So this was based on 10/1/19. I can tell you the numbers have adjusted since then. It ebbs and flows. We have students who are going out. We have students who are coming back. So it's a very fluid number. But just wanting you to know that we care deeply about our students and do everything in our power to keep them in district and support as much as we possibly can. But when the time comes that the team has decided with parents and all of staff members that it's time for an out-of-district placement, there's a continuum of different types of programs. There is a collaborative setting, which is local public schools getting together and collectively utilizing resources and space, which gives kids the opportunity to be closer to home. And then private schools, residential schools, very rarely, but that's the continuum of out-of-district placements. And I know that it's a great concern because of the tuition, but it is something that we carefully analyze every year. We always talk about least restrictive environments. So even if a student's in a private school, if they're doing really well and utilizing the skills and strategies that they've been offered, we try and step them down to a collaborative setting and eventually back.
Yeah.
We have brought many students back to district. In fact, one of them actually came back, he was in a collaborative, came back to district to our REACH program, and is now in the gen ed population.
That's great.
Almost off an IEP. Actually, when he goes up for reeval in this spring, it's anticipated he'll actually come off an IEP. So that's just our success stories. So it does happen, and we try to do that as much as we can. As Ellen alluded to, we are members of two collaboratives, which I know will come up later this evening about how we utilize those collaboratives. And then in the end, I am going to read this slide. I know I'm not supposed to read slides, but this one is so important to us that we really want you to understand that our goal is to teach students with disabilities to become self-sufficient, self-reliant, and independent learners who can advocate for themselves. We want to make sure our environment is safe and inclusive, inclusive being the key word, and not just with students with disabilities, but all of our students are included, and that we foster within our students the knowledge and skills to find, achieve satisfaction in life and be productive global citizens, again, going across with our portrait of a graduate. So we thank you. Just some quick pictures. Yeah. This is one of the standards of one of our students. When I say we have to buy equipment for students who are in wheelchairs, this is a piece of equipment we had to buy, and it grows with him, so we have to, as he gets taller, we have to buy another piece of equipment. This is one of our students using their talker for communication. This is what our cubbies look like in our NEC classroom, so we do have to supply those barriers just so that they can have a quiet space. And this is our student who I said got to play the recorder in the concert, so I wanted to show you his picture as well. So we thank you.
Thank you.
If you have any questions, feel free to email us. I do encourage you to come to the school visits on the tours on Friday.
Yes.
You can see our continuum of services.
It really will help
in action.
What we're talking about.
That's
so
great. Thank you. This was excellent.
We look forward to our continued work together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use this information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008 and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.